This is Recruiting Daily's Recruiting Live Podcast, where we look at the strategies behind the world's best talent acquisition teams. We talk recruiting, sourcing, and talent acquisition. Each week, we take one overcomplicated topic and break it down so that your three-year-old can understand it. Make sense? Are you ready to take your game to the next level? You're at the right spot. You're now entering the mind of a hustler. Here's your host, William Tincup.
This is William Tincup, and you are listening to the Recruiting Daily Podcast. Today we have Sylvia on from Deputy, and our topic today is how to recruit, retain, and advance women to leadership. So, Sylvia, would you do us a favor and introduce yourself and Deputy?
Of course, it would be my pleasure, and thank you so much for having me today, William.
Sure.
My name is Sylvia Martincevic, and I am the CEO of Deputy. Deputy is a global platform for managing hourly workers. And so we help with scheduling and communication, engagement, onboarding. We manage it all. And really, when you look at our platform, we sit at the heart of the labor market. And we focus on the 70% of world's workers who are not knowledge workers.
Right.
But who, you know, our hourly workers, and we want to bring those hourly workers into the digital age. And we do that today across 300,000 businesses, and our technology helps over 1.3 million hourly workers to be more productive and happy at work.
And how many countries, I think you might have mentioned it, how many countries y'all in?
Yeah, we serve businesses and shift workers across 100 countries. So it's a global platform.
That is fantastic. There's so many products that are, I've studied work tech for a number of years, let's just say. And there's so much of it is focused on that other 30%, the knowledge worker side, the salaried side. And so it's just nice to see someone not only just tackling hourly, but tackling hourly from a global perspective is beautiful because, again, especially with the pandemic, you can be anywhere. And a call center employee, and you're a call center employee, and you're not in a box, you're at home, but you're in 15 different countries. And it's okay, we have to pay those folks and all the other stuff too. So just, I love it. I love what y'all do.
Yeah, I think you and I and many knowledge workers like us have benefited a lot over the last decade because of the technology that helped us be more engaged,
100%.
Right? Zoom and Slack and LinkedIn. But when you think about who is building that technology for the world's 2.7 billion hourly workers, there's not many companies. And we obsess about that universe of workers, and we want to help them build better and more productive and engaged working environment for them.
So a couple weeks ago, I was on a podcast with Donald Knights. He's a CHRO at Greenhouse. And he asked me a question. So I was the host, but he asked me a question. He said, what's the root word of allyship? And I was like, ally? He's no, it's all. All conversations, all people, all the time. And I'm like, first of all, it's just fantastic. You just trademark that because that's just beautiful. But it's as we talk about our topic, You've got obviously a great reference point in your own career. We could obviously go through your own career, but you've also been in other situations where you've seen other women flourish and probably other women or even maybe yourself not flourish. So let's start with the recruit, retain, and advance women in leadership. So let's start with the first part. How do we recruit women? What are some of the barriers? What do you think we're doing wrong? If magic wand, I have one actually. If I gave you a magic wand, like what would you fix as it relates to just on the recruiting side of women?
William, this is such an interesting time for labor markets, period, and for women at work in particular. We have seen the tightest labor markets ever in the history. There is that have been open for months and quarters, and they're not getting filled. And we have also seen, especially for women, that more than a million women left the workforce since February 2020. And what we saw is that flexibility at work is incredibly important, as women do tend to take more of the caregiving responsibilities at home. And many of them, given the fact that there is no childcare options available or elderly care options available for them, many of them have stayed at home. And so I think that the more flexibility we bring into workplaces, more women we're going to be able to attract. Flexibility is key for women workers. The second thing that I think many of us realized post-pandemic is that employees want more than a CEO that's an authoritarian leader leading, CEO as the dictator.
Hopefully we're killing that off slowly, slowly, but surely.
But we're seeing that many employees and women in particular, they want leaders that display empathy in their leadership style and inclusivity rather than relying on authoritative approaches. And so we know the more inclusive and collaborative workplaces we build, more women will be attracted to be a part of those cultures. And I was going to say, to your point around how can we recruit more of them? I think it's as much of a recruiting problem as it is a retention problem.
Yeah. And again, with flexibility, empathy, and inclusivity, if you're not flexible, so like we'll just deal with a return to the office as a concept, and it's 5 days in a box, you're just not going to attract. So you've already put up a gate at the beginning of that discussion. You're just not going to attract 52% of the population, which is absurd to me because you'd want to be open to as many people so that you create a great talent pool, right? And you create a great funnel and get the most qualified people and all that stuff. But just something as simple as not being flexible. And again, in the way that you work and the way that you approach work, I love that. It also kind of gets back to job descriptions and career sites and employer branding and things like how do we put ourselves out there in front of people? What have you, because you serve the hourly market, what have you seen from like clients in terms of how they position flexibility or how they position or not empathy or inclusivity?
Yeah, we have seen really wonderful ways that employers of hourly workers are using platform like Deputy and many other platforms.
Right.
Today, about 50% of employees that are hourly workers are women. And so what we've seen with employers is to say, you know what, forget about the 8-hour shift. How about a 4-hour shift? How about one person does the morning, 4 after you take your kids to work, perhaps you work 4 to 2 o'clock, and then another person takes 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock. And so having these almost mini shifts, we see more and more of that happening on our platform. We are also seeing that a lot more employers are using what I'm going to call smart scheduling, right?
We know,
as humans, we have unintentional biases, right? If you're a human, you have unconscious bias.
Right, of course.
Like that's just, we just all need to accept it. We all carry biases, which is the lens through which we look at the world. And so we have built this smart scheduling tooling that a lot of our employers are using because they're like, you know what? I don't want my manager to schedule employees because how do we know that it won't introduce bias? So we're seeing a lot more technology-driven scheduling that helps eliminate that bias that may, unconscious bias that may exist. And then the third thing we have seen, which is really cool, is a lot of employers are using it's called shift pulse. At the end of every shift, employers want to know, how does that hourly worker feel?
Oh, that's cool.
And they want to get feedback. What worked in today's shift? What didn't work? How is your manager? And we all know when we are heard as employees, we feel belonging and we feel inclusion. And I think all of those things have been helping.
Let's see.
A more inclusive workplace.
Yeah. Well, again, you look at companies that are in the hourly market that don't have that. Right. So like you put A against B for just a second. One has smart scheduling, has the ability for people to, hey, life happens. You need to be able to shift around things and move shifts, et cetera. And in companies that don't have that versus companies that also have, I love I love actually the pulse is really important to me because it's not 4 months later. It's not this delayed response of it's like, how'd you do? Like, I love those things. They're kind of more mood things at airports where you go through and it's like, how was your experience? I'm sure a lot of people don't like those things, but I like them because it's, you know what? I had a good experience. All right, there. Or if I had a bad experience, okay, there. I feel better. Again, it probably is a placebo. It doesn't do anything. But I love have the ability to ask somebody right after their shift and get that data and immediately. So if something is, again, if something terrible happened, you can actually, as a manager, as a leader, you can then do something. Like, you can't act like you didn't know. You now know. Now it gives you some actual intel on what you can do. So I love that.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is that standard engagement surveys that we as knowledge workers get, that get sent every few months, don't work for shift workers because on average, hourly workers switch jobs every 6 to 8 months. And so real-time insight for employers is really critical so they can adapt, so they can be smarter about retaining their workers. And workers love to tell you, just as you said, you love to press that button at the airport, the smiley face. Workers love to tell you what's happening in your workplace. And frankly, we now collect that data given the almost 500 million of shifts that we have scheduled to date on our platform. We collect data now at societal level on how are hourly workers feeling. And we can use that data to drive better behaviors. Because if we see that if you offer smart scheduling and you offer these different tools for your workers, you have better engagement
right. And
retention. And we could use the data to influence behavior within the shift workplaces, which I hope can drive the creation of better work environments.
And again, as you mentioned, it's not just the feeling or the idea of being listened to. That's real. You are being listened to. And again, everyone likes that, not just women, but everyone actually likes to be listened to and heard. Let's pivot and talk a little bit about retention of women leaders. I'll say this, years ago as an analyst, I was in Vegas at a meeting and the CEO setting up, all the executives were setting up, it was a large company, it was about $3 billion company in our space. And it was a bunch of dudes. So no one, he asked a question, a CEO asked a question and said, okay, what do you, fire away, there's no one else, there's PR, no one else is in the room, just what questions do you have for us? And no one was saying anything. So he looked at me because I know you have opinions. So what are you going? So why am I looking at 7 white guys? And it was uncomfortable for a minute. And he goes, you know what? I'm not going to give you excuses. All I'll tell you is that next year it won't be 7 white guys. Wow. Okay. So then he calls me on Saturday. I'm at my kid's soccer game. And I see him, I thought he butt dialed me. So I like literally looked at my phone, I'm like, huh? So I answered, I'm like, hey, what's going on? He goes, okay. So what I couldn't say is I started a women in leadership program and I can't remember the number of folks that he had. And they got to a certain level, VP or SVP, and they all got poached. They were in Boston and they all got poached. He goes, so here's what, I couldn't say that because it would sound like I was mansplaining or excuse making or whatever. So he goes, I'm just going to quadruple the number of women that I put in the program. They're not going to be able to poach them all because we've got great women in our company already that can be promoted. And I'm going to go out and bring in more women. So that's why I said, I'm not going to make excuses. I'm just going to tell you it's going to be different. And to his credit, the next year it was different. So it was a funny story. It's like, okay, in his mind, he tried. He didn't know the scope. He didn't understand how at a certain point the women are going to be so talented that other companies are also going to see that they're so talented. headhunters, executive search firms are going to come and get them. Okay, that's fine. But, you know, I'm fascinated with, okay, what does it take to actually retain women today? Like in just nothing about deputy in particular, but you've had a wonderful career so far. What made you stick around? What kept you from moving or doing other things and being engaged in what you were doing?
William, thank you so much for sharing that story. And I think that story is very similar to how I see the world. I think that some of the challenges with attracting and retaining, promoting women don't necessarily come from people being bad people, right? It comes from best intentions, right? Right? It comes from best intentions, best efforts, and that's my belief. And so the more that we can do to be persistent, we know success is not going to be achieved overnight. If you look at tech CEOs, only about 15% of them are women today.
Right.
I'm one of the rare 15% that happen to be women.
Right.
But it's 2023. It's not 1980s. How are we that low? We have seen progress. And I have to say, I am optimistic that it starts from being aware to you, as you described, to your leader being aware. And then from awareness comes desire to do better, because we're all good people that want to do better. I don't think any of us have to convince ourselves anymore that it's good to have a diverse group of people rather than an echo chamber.
If we're still having that discussion, we should probably have another discussion.
Right. And so I think we're past all of that. Now it's a question of how do we make consistent progress? Because success is not going to be achieved overnight. It's going to take a consistent effort of education, of awareness, of education, and then action. And to me, when I look at Deputy, just to put a couple of points there on Deputy, today we serve 50% of the customers we serve are women. It's really important that we understand those customers.
Oh, wow.
The Deputy team, 75% of our executive team are women. 75.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Which is, you don't see companies that look that way. But in the future, when you ask yourself, who are going to be the winning companies? It is going to be the companies that are listening to their consumers.
Right.
So many of the consumers happen to be women.
Yep.
And I think we need to continue to shape our organizations to look like the customers that we serve, not for any kind of, what should I say?
Yeah, you're not doing it for philanthropic reasons.
Exactly.
Right. There's
not a not-for-profit. It is because you want profit.
Yeah, well, that's
profit.
It's also what's really wonderful about what you're peeling back is it's the customers of your customers, too. It's like y'all have customers. Y'all's Texas colloquialism, you and all. Sorry about that. But y'all have customers, but your customers have customers. So it's like you're looking at not only your employees and them being able to see something that they can be proud of in y'all's leadership team, you're also showing your customers what it looks like and enabling them. Again, I love the way that you put awareness, education, and action. Again, all three of these things are critical for both recruiting and retaining women in leadership. So awareness of wherever you are on your journey, if I understand that correctly. Okay, great. Education. Okay, where should we be on our journey? And that's okay to kind of, wherever you are, like it is what it is. And then action. So let's talk about both, all three of those, if you don't mind, and we can do it quickly. But it's just, how do you become aware, or how do you teach? Because you've got young managers, you've got young folks, both male and female and everything else. You've got folks that need to learn what this should look like. So how do you teach awareness?
Sure. I think that goes back to what I mentioned earlier, which is you got to have the right culture.
Right.
It's safe to make mistakes, right? Again, we're all human beings. We all have biases. And I think the way that awareness and education happens is you need to foster the kind of culture where it's okay to make a mistake, and it's okay to provide feedback and to coach. And feedback, right, is not just saying you did this wrong. Feedback means saying, hey, you did this wrong, but perhaps next time, this is how you could approach it. I've had so many managers in my life. I don't know about you, William, but they would provide feedback. Just, it would be really criticism. It would not be feedback.
That's right. Yeah, no, it's okay, thinly veiled feedback.
Thank you for criticizing, but are you in this with me? Can you coach me? Because if I knew how to do it better, I would.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like I was trying to do bad. It's whatever the bad outcome. And some of that criticism is, it's also them internalizing other things that they've got going on and then rendering it to the person that's in front of them.
That's exactly right. And so the kind of culture where there's a culture of feedback, a culture of coaching, a culture of making mistakes, but learning from them, right? Because if you have the kind of culture where mistakes are prohibited, forget about innovation, forget about constant progress, right? You need to build the kind of culture where it's going to be safe to have right. these conversations. And then on action, one thing that I want to make sure that I pinpoint is action is on all of us. And yes. that includes the women too.
I had a podcast about alpha females, and I learned so much that podcast because I'm like, I didn't know there was a thing. Like, literally, I'm such an idiot. I'm like, say what? And they're like, oh yeah, absolutely. I've been in organizations, the guest was saying, I've been in organizations where it wasn't men. Like you'd think the people that were holding me back were men. That's a pretty easy target. He's like, no, it's the women. I'm like, no. I mean,
human beings are, come on, none of us
yeah.
are perfect.
Yeah.
And so when I say action, you know, the bit that's exciting to me is that this literally stat just came up fresh off the press this morning. We're seeing that in the first 2 months of 2023, there is an all-time high of 31% of new CEOs in the U.S. were women. 31% of new CEOs in the U.S. were women. And as I read that, you know, what I'm hoping that stat is telling us is that the million women that left right. the workplace after COVID.
Or got fired in the first round or second round of COVID. So
exactly. Yeah. And I hope that they're, perhaps they took some time to mm-hmm. reset and they're coming back.
With it, yeah.
That they are part of this change, right?
I hope so. I hope you're right.
And so that's my wish, is that more women that have left workplace come back and that they want to build the kind of environments where everybody thrives.
I love that. Last question. I know we got to go, but I need to ask you, what does success look like? When we talk about this topic, how to recruit, retain, and advance, we didn't even get to advance, but we'll do that next time. Women into leadership. What does success look like for you? Like when you look out at it, like you just gave a wonderful stat, but as you look at it, like, okay, we have this podcast next year. How do we know that we've reached, how do we know that we've actually moved the ball forward?
I think long-term success, the way that I would describe it is, I have a daughter, Isabella, who is 8 years old. I hope that the time in 15 years when she enters workforce or so, I hope that this is no longer a topic on podcasts. I hope that
right.
over 50% of women are CEOs of top companies, that the pay gap is, it's not a thing. We don't need to talk about it. And that this is just a standard. It just is.
That actually mirrors a lot of what I've heard from other constituents, other groups of people. Is when you've reached there, when you're not talking about it. It's just not even, it's assumed that you're doing that. Like you don't have to have a conversation about it. So
that's right.
I think that's beautiful. Sylvia, I could talk to you forever, but you have a job. Apologies. I'll have you on the next time we're going to talk about internal mobility, because I think there's a whole thing to unpack with just how to actually be a great mentor, ally, and how to actually help women succeed in the workplace, which we just didn't have time to get into, but it's a good thing. I appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for discussing this very important topic.
100%. And thanks for everyone listening to the podcast. Until next time.
You've been listening to the Recruiting Live podcast by Recruiting Daily. Check out the latest industry podcasts, webinars, articles, and news at recruitingdaily.com.